Hey guys, what's up and welcome back to the Alpha Girl Confidence Podcast. I'm your host, Shay Hatto, and this is episode 204. So on today's episode, I sat down with Linda Flanagan, who is the author of the new book, Take Back the Game, How Money and Mania Are Ruining Kids' Sports. So this conversation may well be one of the most important conversations that we've ever had on the podcast, as youth sports has taken a dramatic downward turn over the last couple decades. So in this conversation, we discuss how competitive youth sports affects family dynamics. We talk about the role that money plays in perpetuating the problem, and related to that, how parents are being manipulated by sports corporations and leagues. We talk about the importance of letting your kids lead and play freely without structure and supervision. We discuss why parents need to get their own life instead of being so heavily invested in their kids' sports, and so much more. So not only do we talk about a lot of the problems associated with the youth sports culture today, but we also discuss a lot of the solutions as well. So parents and coaches, like I said, this is going to be an incredibly powerful and important episode for you to listen to. So make sure you check out the episode and grab Linda's book when you're done watching. You won't want to miss reading the book. So I hope you enjoy the episode as much as I did. Hi, Linda. So excited to have you on the show. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So I first found you, as I told you, when I sent you a Twitter, that I found you on the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. Mm-hmm. So shout out to that podcast. But I had been kind of listening to that podcast because I was seeing that we're so inundated with youth sports and the youth sports culture has changed so much. So when I listened to your episode, I was like, I have to have her on because your work and the message and how you deliver your message, I think is so important for parents to hear. And my hopes are that we actually may trigger a few parents that are listening to this. I'm sure you get that plenty when you talk about this with youth sports parents. So with that being said, tell us a little bit about you and how you got into the work that you're currently doing and your book and everything.
Okay, well, let's see. First, I consider myself an athlete. I played sports growing up, both softball and tennis, and, you know, in my high school teams, although it was quite different then. You know, it was none of the organized stuff. Right. My parents would have had none of it regardless had it existed, but yeah. It was much more low key. And then I took up running on my own in high school and then ended up running in college and graduate school and mm-hmm. continue to run now. And I was pretty competitive for a while.
Yeah.
So like, I consider myself an athlete. They've been a big part of my life, you know, and remain to be.
Go ahead.
Well, I took up coaching when my youngest was in kindergarten and only stopped in 2019. So I coached for about 17 years and, you know, so I kind of saw the other side of athletics, being a coach. And then my youngest child also was very into sports. So I kind of had the parent hat and the coaching hat and could kind of understand, I felt, pretty well, both mm-hmm. perspectives, which can often be seemingly in conflict.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So I have your book right here. So people watching on YouTube, Take Back the Game, How Money and Mania Are Killing, or sorry, I can't read backwards.
Ruining.
Are ruining kids' sports and why it matters. I'm like, I can't read like that. And one of the first things that really stood out to me was when you were talking about watching your son, it was basketball, I believe,
yes.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
You were watching yep. your son play basketball and he did so well and you felt so great. And you said something along the lines of like that so many parents attach their own psyche to
yes.
their kids' performance. And that was for me like, oh my gosh, like how many parents are up or down based solely on their kids' performance. So
yes.
will you just talk about like that in general
yes.
and maybe your experience with when you came to that realization?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I had many realizations and I felt it bothered me how much I cared because like, this is like, he was, you know, that particular story, I think he was in third or fourth grade and he did really well. There we are sitting on the bleachers at the middle school gym and feeling like, wow, we have just arrived. Look at our son. He's so good. And he was good. He was very good, but he was only like 8 or 9 years old, like big deal. You know,
right.
I mean, good for him. Great. It's nice to feel good about that. I'm proud of him, but it just was so disproportionate to what was really going on. And, you know, on the flip side, when he didn't play well, it was kind of like, demoralizing and like, oh, it just felt odd to me. And I couldn't kind of square it with my own parents' view of sports and how I'd been raised with sports, which is like, these are a nice thing to do. They keep you busy, they keep you healthy. But, okay, that's not your real life. This is just a little part of life. And it just had taken on such a greater role in my own life, and I've recognized it in my own life, and I wondered why, and that's kind of why I started poking around and wrote some stories, did a little exploring about it, and I also felt like there's a little bit of honestly dishonesty or delusion on the part of parents about why we're doing this, why we're putting so much into it, because honestly, it like really makes you feel good when your child does well, and that's great. Like we should feel proud. But it's just out of proportion and can drive a lot of this stuff, drive the excess in a way that's not healthy, it's not in the kid's best interest.
And what stood out to me with that was when I was an athlete, my dad was very, 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 I would say, overly involved. And when I had a bad game, our relationship really wasn't very good. When I had a good game, it was great. And so our relationship ebbed and flowed with my performance, and also not just our relationship, but even my whole family. Like it affected my family dynamic. And when I got hurt, I tore my ACL when I was 12. And that was like a really hard time for my family because my dad was like so down and out about it, and it created arguments and just like the family dynamics totally changed. So how have you seen how, and we'll get into like why youth sports has changed so much, but how have you seen the change in youth sports and I guess what we're talking about with the psyche, how has that affected just family dynamics in general, do you think?
Well, I mean, that's kind of remarkable when you think about it, like your father's reaction. I mean, he cared so much. And he cared so much because it made him feel so great when you did well and just, bummed out when you didn't. And then when you got hurt, like, oh my God, now what? And, just how many months are you going to be like on the shelf? And I go into the book a I have a chapter about how we got here with parents, like what shifts have happened over the last, 30 years or so, or 40 years, where children have moved from, as the great journalist Jennifer Senior said, from our employees to our bosses. And, so that they have become sort of the center of parents' lives, the children. So like your experience of it, where your whole family was bummed out when you tore your ACL. It's been there's been kind of a varied changes that have happened in, since the 70s when there was a recession and parents began to worry about their kids' economic futures, and there was concern about stranger danger, that great worry about stranger danger, an exaggerated worry about it. So that pushed everyone into play dates. And then after Title IX was adopted and then really got enforced in the 90s with more gusto, suddenly there were all these girls wanting to play. So it was like a perfect opportunity for sports to take off. And it just became more, our children's performance became more a reflection of our moral worth as parents versus, say, my parents. So I'm older than you, Shay. And for my parents, they certainly loved me and my siblings, but it wasn't our athletic performance was not the determinant of, my value.
And also as an athlete too, if your parent, if that is their value, also attach your value to your performance. Because for me, like subconsciously, it was when I perform well, I get more love. When I don't perform well, I don't get as much love. And then it's a, the whole identity is I'm just an athlete. So it really is like the identity of the athlete is not just with the athlete, but with the parent as well.
Oh,
And
that's
so,
so, oh, that's so hard. That must have been really hard for you.
and we've ta and my dad will probably listen to this, and he'll, and we've talked about this before, and I've talked about it on other podcasts and just other stuff before. And we've had a conversation around it, and it's just like I just was trying to help. Like I didn't realize that, what I was doing was actually not good for us and not good for you. So the thing is like parents, they always have a good intention, but until there's some awareness around it, which is what we're bringing, then it's like, oh, like I didn't realize what I was doing was maybe harming my child or my own worth or even my family dynamics.
Yes. Well, and then as you know, you say about your identity, then it also, it can just narrow your identity so much. If everyone thinks of you as, and what was your sport?
Soccer, basketball, mostly soccer.
Okay. So you're the soccer player or you're the athlete and that's who you are. And it's so narrowing then. So when you do have a catastrophic injury, as you did, you're like, oh no, what do I do now?
Yeah. Who am I?
Yeah. Who are you? What, you know,
yeah.
Who are you? And especially if, you know, if the whole family is like let down by this, that's really, really difficult. And you're just, that's many kids' experience, you know, it's not unusual.
I know. It's really wild. And then I can't remember the exact number, but in your book, you say that the youth sports industry is now worth $19 billion. Billion with a B. $19 billion, which is more than the NFL, which is pretty insane.
Yes.
So you talk about the, over the last, you say, I think 20 years, that youth sports has taken a dramatic change, one of them being money, one of them being status and the stakes, right? And then the third being colleges and universities.
Yes.
So let's talk about the first one.
Okay.
So let's talk about money first. So $19 billion industry. I don't know where exactly we want to go with this, but in what ways do you feel like money has just played a huge part in this? Just let's have a conversation around it.
You know, I think one of the most interesting interviews I had was with a man who was involved at the creation of Disney's Wide World of Sports complex.
Yeah.
And that was built in 1997. And, you know, it was just incredible to me because he just explained how Disney made a strategic business decision to build this sports complex because they recognized that they were missing out on the teenage cohort. So they wanted to find a way to draw teenagers to Orlando so that they would stay in the hotels and all that, because that's where Disney makes the money, in the hotels and the parks.
Right.
And it turned out to be wildly successful, much more successful than they expected. And then after 9/11 happened and like tourism declined, it didn't decline at the Wide World of Sports versus the other parks. So it was like, oh, light bulb went off. This is like, we need to like ramp this up. And other communities also saw this success of Disney's Wide World of Sports complex and then began to start building their own complexes. So now there are the number that's bandied about is there are 30,000 sports complexes in the U.S. now, where, you know, tournaments are held and, you know, teams are expected to travel all over the place to go play at the tournament in, you know, sometimes the middle of nowhere because the towns have built these to draw tourists.
Yes. And I know the big thing with, I hear specifically soccer parents complaining about this all the time is that they have these, like where a certain tournament, you have to stay in this hotel. So have you seen that? And what is that all about? I mean, I know it's about the money, but what is your take on that?
Well, I hadn't heard that, but it doesn't surprise me because, you know, the towns are very invested in these facilities being successful because they get tax revenue from them.
Yeah.
And the hotels want the business. I mean, it doesn't surprise me in the least, but it just shows you kind of what the underlying motivation is. I mean, the underlying motivation is to make money. And, you know, say what they will about, oh, your kid needs this, go to the next level, or, you know, again, wherever that is. There's always this emphasis on more, 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 buy more, spend more, travel more. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you'll find your pot of gold.
Right.
And there, it's really not, that advice is not grounded in your child's developmental interest.
No.
It's grounded in the desire to make money.
And that's, I think, one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to have you on, because the reality is that parents are being manipulated in a lot of ways, being told that, oh, you have to play for this kind of league if your kid wants to go to college, you have to attend this tournament, you have to go to this showcase, you have to hire this trainer, like all of these things that you have to do or else you'll get left behind.
Yes.
Like that's a term that's used all the time, is you're going to fall behind. You're going to get left
Yes.
behind if you don't do
Yes.
this thing.
Yes. Which, I think is just the saddest thing because, there's this wonderful book I refer to in my book called Late Bloomers about, how our culture is so organized around or so excited about early achievement. We celebrate the early achievers, like the little rock stars when they're 12 and 13 and movie stars and, the little athletes, Tiger Woods, was he on the Today Show at age 5 or something? Like we
Right.
celebrate them, and there's been this pressure then on younger and younger for kids to achieve and achieve big at younger and younger ages. And it's just so detrimental to kids. And I've seen this as a coach, like the young people I coach, that they feel like, oh my God, if I'm not captain, if I'm not this, it's like, oh, the end of the world. And that's, kids ought to be experimenting and trying different things, try different sports, or imagine trying a different position on a team, even that's verboten. It's just not beneficial to their long-term development. This is what all the experts say. And yet this pressure, like, oh, if you don't do it, you're going to miss out. Well, it's
It's
not in
like,
their interest.
yeah, I mean, sports is, if you look at it, it's such a small part of a
Yes.
child's life. And if they go pro even, it's like what, 20, 25 years of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But we forget so often that like there's the development of the human being is like, why are we putting the athlete before the human being?
Yes,
And
right.
that's what absolutely drives me up the wall.
Yeah.
And so one and really, really crazy thing you said in your book was, I think it was a lacrosse coach. And the lacrosse coach was asked
Yes.
by a mom. She was like, her daughter was like, what, 5 years old? And she said, is it too late for my daughter to start lacrosse?
Exactly. Yes. That's the most common question this woman gets. Now, you just have to like step back from that and say, wait a minute. This is where like parents need to say, hold on. What is this? We don't have to do this. This is the other thing I keep wanting parents to get the message. You don't have to do this. Just because everyone's running around crazily and thinking, oh my God, we're going to miss out, it's not compulsory. And kids will grow and develop at their own rates. And that child who's like, jammed into lacrosse camp at age 5 because, the parents are worried he or she's going to miss out, that kid by 10 might be like, done. And meanwhile, the kid who picks up a lacrosse stick and plays in the backyard at age starting at 9 and loves it and wants to do it can be have they can have completely different trajectories. And it's just this, there's a sense that it's compulsory, that you're gonna like be damaging your child's prospects if you don't do all this stuff. And it's crazy.
It is crazy. I mean, I wanted to quit when I was 14, 15 years old. Like, I really wanted to quit. I didn't because I thought, oh, what would my dad think? My dad will be disappointed. And I'm glad I didn't because it led me down the path that I am in now. But when you start so early and when it just becomes a part of your life and there's the pressures associated with it, like you can't just be a kid. Like I had this conversation with my sister because she's trying to really just raise her kids and in the you don't have to do it, like you said. Like
Yeah.
just let your kids, be kids, play, whatever. But her and I were talking and we're just saying like we feel like we didn't actually get the chance to just like be kids. Like our schedules were always jam-packed. We had school, we'd come home for a second, grab a snack, go to practice, do homework, and do it all over again. And granted, my childhood was awesome, but there every day after school, I remember specifically saying, I wish I could just be a kid and play. I wish I could go hang out with my friends, go ride my bike, go do anything. And I feel like now it's like a badge of honor if your kid is busy and they have a packed schedule. It's like what? So let's talk about free play
Yeah.
versus like the structured play and how that's also
Yes.
changed and how that's not necessarily the best thing.
Well, I mean, that's the other, there's so many ironies in this that free play, and the expert on this is Peter Gray, who's at Boston College. And he's written about how it's in free play that kids really learn. If you care about learning, it's when they're together and there's not some grown-up standing around, like, reminding them of the rules. They figure it out, and they have to negotiate, and they have to compromise, and they figure out, like, if they divide teams, you know, as he put it, the goal is to have fun and to keep the game going.
Right.
So you're not going to have like one team of like all the great kids and the other team with those who can't hit a ball, say.
Yeah.
They're going to even it out and they're going to figure out how to negotiate and get along and make it work. And that's what it's supposed to be. That's what you're supposed to get from sports.
Right.
And, you know, and another thing is in many of the organized sports at the younger ages, the kids don't even get that much exercise. There's a lot of standing around.
In lines.
And I think that so much of that is we're not thinking about that. We're not thinking about what are we doing this for? I think that's why are we doing this? Like, we need to think about that.
I mean, I think a lot of people think, oh, sports is great because it's going to keep my kid active, which yes, but they can also be active by climbing a tree, riding their bike, going to the river, like, you know, like doing any of that stuff. Like, you don't have to have a sport, a gym, the equipment to be active. You have your body and you have space, and that's all you need to be active, really.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And and this is why I think the whole notion of status, which I have a chapter on, which I already talked about some, is so relevant, because I do think it is that much of what drives this is the parents' own, that the feeling I had when my son did well, which was like, ooh, look at me. I'm pretty, I must be pretty awesome because look at my child out there. And that it makes you, when you feel good as a parent, that's like a driving reason to do it and to take it, you know, to start when they're young and get them out there on the field so they can shine and make you look good. And you know, that's kind of it's an uglier reason to do it. And I think if you're kind of, as a parent, aware of that danger, that it's easy to tip over from pride to like a mania, then maybe you'll be better able to say, okay, hold on. We don't need to do that. We don't need to play this. My child doesn't need to play that sport year round, or that's crazy. We're not doing that just because some so-called authority says you have to. Who's making a buck off it? Like, you just don't have to do it.
Yes. And actually, you interviewed, or maybe I don't know if you interviewed him, but there's an excerpt in the book from Travis Dorsch.
Oh, yes.
And I went to Utah State. And so he was my professor and my master's degree for one of my classes. But that quote or whatever it was, so he said, and I totally relate to this as a kid, that the more money parents spend, the less enjoyment your kids have, and also the more pressure they feel.
Yes, yes.
That is huge, because my parents were like, well, we're spending, you know, $2,000 a year or whatever it was for you to go play for this team. And it was like, oh, I have to, my parents spend all this money. I have to perform. I have to keep playing. Otherwise, I'm going to let them down and they're going to waste all their money.
Yes.
So talk about the influence of spending money and the relationship between that and enjoyment and pressure.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think if you have means, you think, well, why not? Why not? But here's like, this to me is like such evidence. Here's a clear cut reason why you shouldn't do it. Because if you really want to help your child develop a love of a sport, then you shouldn't be forking over the bucks. You should be withholding them and let them develop that interest on their own. Mm-hmm. That you're actually interfering with their development, their enthusiasm for the sport by paying a lot for it.
Yeah.
And then that's so, and I think it's, you know, if you're an athletic parent and you really want your kids to be sporty or involved, and that's the way I was with my kids. Like, I wanted them to do sports and get exercise. You know, it's really hard to make sense of the reality that you cannot buy intrinsic motivation. You can't buy it. And the only way your children are going to be good athletes is if they have intrinsic motivation. So, if you understand that the more you pay, the more you're undermining intrinsic motivation, maybe that will help you stop, you know, paying for the, you know, fancy shoes and the, you know, the extra nice racket. I mean, we bought some idiotic things that ended up as dog toys, you know.
Right.
And it was just dumb. It was dumb. And it's so easy as a parent to think, well, maybe this will do it, you know, maybe this will be all the difference.
Yeah. And I mean, here's a thought too, is if your kid does want, say, new pair of cleats or new ball or whatever, can maybe your kid do some jobs around the house or get a little, you know, kind of earn some money on their own and learn the value of a little bit of, you know, work ethic. Like, that's an idea too, right?
Yeah. Imagine.
Right. Yeah. So I just really felt that as a child. And I actually, have had this conversation with parents and shared my experience, and they were like, well, if my kid doesn't know how much I spent, then I feel like she won't take it as seriously.
Oh,
what are your thoughts on that?
That's very interesting.
Like, if there's money behind it, she's going to try harder, kind of.
Okay,
thing.
But see, that's just not no.
But that's not intrinsically motivated. Like,
no, it is not.
About.
Then they're doing it to satisfy you. You know,
yes,
they're doing it because not for their own reasons, but to satisfy your reasons. It's entirely backwards. You know, it reminds me a little bit of the idea of like, well, if I join a gym, if I pay $500 a month or whatever to join this gym, I'm going to have to go because I paid it. And like, that does not generate intrinsic desire to exercise.
No, it works just for maybe a week or two, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'm good.
I've never heard of that before. And I think that's not the right way to get your kids to be interested in sports. Honestly, I mean, it's just like, look at the data. It just doesn't help.
Yeah. And so when I was reading, and I kind of talked to you about this before we started recording, is that when I was reading the money section, part of me was like, like, I feel like I kind of was part of the problem in a way, because my work is, you know, if your kid works with me, they'll have more confidence and they'll quote unquote get ahead. Now, my messaging is not like that. My messaging is more around the human first, but still, like, when I was reading this and I told you I'm going to be making some major shifts in my business, not just because of your book, but because before I read your book, there was something in me that was like, the sports thing, it's becoming too much. Like, we're focusing too much on the athlete, and I think it's really hurting kids. And so that was something for me that I just want to express to you and to people listening that I understand that maybe I was unknowingly part of the problem in a way.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I've heard that from other people too. And I think, you know, you can also be part of the solution if you're helping kids develop a fuller sense of themselves and help them recognize that they're not only a soccer player or a lacrosse player, that and that it's okay to not be confident all the time. I mean, I think, you know, sports psychologists are often hired to help kids, you know, be tougher out there or something, or be resilient. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you can be an influence that encourages compassion and kindness to themselves, I think, and understanding that they're more than just an athlete, I think that's a service.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I definitely started out, you know, it was, I'm going to help your daughter become a confident athlete. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, it's a confident person, and the athlete is second. It's the cherry on top. But it really is just going back to the whole money thing. You know, I think it's important because I have had plenty of parents who come to me and say, will you work with my daughter? Mm-hmm. And I can tell that the girl, she doesn't really want to work with me, to be honest. It's more of they are just putting them with me or signing them up for a camp because they think they know what's best for their kid, but the kid doesn't want it. And if the kid doesn't want it, I personally don't want to work with them because they're not going to see any results. And so I think it's so important. Like, it's so simple. Like, have the conversation and ask your kid, do you want to sign up for this camp? And it's like, with no strings attached. Like, if you do, great. If you don't, just as great.
Yeah.
I think it's just having that conversation with your kids.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, you know, if you read the Aspen Institute Sports and Society program, puts out so much great information, and they came out with 8 principles for youth sports. And the first was, ask your child what he or she wants. Like, it has to come from them. And that's what's missing in all this, is it's the, you know, the parents hiring you because they think their child needs it, but not because the child says, hey, I could use some help.
And then also, in a way, sometimes if the parent is just like, oh, I think you need this, they're like, oh, I have a problem.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's something wrong with me. And I always try to phrase it like, hey, there's nothing wrong with you. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
But it is like, oh, I didn't know I had this problem I remember you saying this in the book that, oh, now there needs to be adult intervention. Like, my problem is severe enough to where now there's this adult intervention.
Yes. Yeah. Cause I had that experience here, you know, with parents like, oh, you know, what can I do to help my 8-year-old get faster? I'm like, get out of the way.
Go
just
play.
Let him go have fun, and, you know, don't get the blocks out and tell him how to, burst off the blocks faster. It's kind of crazy, you know? And I do think it signals to kids that, like, we need an outside adult. We need the assistance of an outside adult to correct my problem because I'm not sufficiently motivated. You know, a lot of kids are not motivated at a young age. I mean, they can grow into it or they might not. And that's okay too. You know, that's okay too. The point is that we want kids and young adults and older adults to be moving and exercising, to make movement a part of daily life.
Yeah.
So that you have a healthy body and healthy mind and, you know, all the wonderful advantages that go with exercise that become integrated into your life. It's not just to, like, you know, win a county championship when you're 14.
Yeah. And also with me personally and my sister, it was like our only exercise for the most part was our sport. And we would want to go snowboarding or sledding, but my dad was like, no, because you can't afford to get hurt and get injured and not play. And so it was like just the sport. Like, we weren't allowed to do some of those more dangerous, things because it would jeopardize
your main sport.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Jeopardize the chance of a scholarship, especially as you got older. Don't jeopardize that. Cause then, so with that being said, let's kind of talk about the stakes and status and college and university. I feel like those are very connected.
Very tied.
Very tied together.
Yeah, they are.
I know we've kind of interplayed it already and kind of talked about it a little bit, but where do you see the most as far as, like, the status of youth sports and the stakes that, you know, kids are faced with?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the status question really it has stuck with me because I live in a community that's, you know, well off and a lot of well-connected adults and, you know, children at private school who have every advantage, you know, not that they're all, like, thriving. I don't mean to suggest that they're thriving, but that the idea for these families that the child needs to play a sport to get into college is, I don't really believe that's the motivation for it because it doesn't make any sense because these kids with the right pedigrees and backgrounds and tutoring and all of that, they're going to get into a decent college. You know, maybe they get into a better college if they played a sport, but they're still going to do fine and they have adult connections. So I've often felt that there's another motivation driving the youth sports phenomenon. And that's where I come to the idea of status and also my own experience feeling irrationally up and down, depending on how my child played. And, you know, sports are so celebrated in our country. You know, they're elevated figures. They're 34 of the top 100 most top paid celebrities are athletes. We follow them. We love them. And, you know, we're capitalist and competitive, and it stands to reason that having an athletic child would be a kind of a natural way to gain status as a parent.
Yeah, right.
And I don't think we're thinking about that enough as parents, about what are we getting from this? And, like, let's step back and say for a minute and stop saying, well, she loves it. That's why we drive all over the place. Or he's just wild about soccer. So we're spend every weekend apart. I just think there's more to it than that.
When I think about it, go ahead.
Well, and of course that's tied to college because, colleges, they're so ridiculously competitive, absurdly expensive, increasingly difficult to get into. So there's more prestige associated with getting into one of the tippy top schools.
Yep.
And especially in the affluent areas where that's very, very important.
Yeah.
To be, you know, admitted to a tippy top school. It makes sense if you're paying attention, like, well, you know, there's a lot of advantages to, you know, pursuing athletics as a way into a better school. And that's about status. It's not about necessarily what's in the kid's interest or, it's about getting into a better school and ostensibly because that's going to help them. But, you know, sometimes the difference between colleges is quite minuscule.
Absolutely. Yeah. We could have a whole nother conversation on that specifically, but I think for me personally in my family, I definitely would have had to take out a lot of student loans if I didn't play sports. And so I think for a lot of families that don't necessarily have the financial resources to put their kids through college, like that's their way is through athletics. And so I get that because that was my family. But yeah, it really is so much about the status and D1. I have to go D1 or Power Five or like that kind of
thing. But okay. But in your case, you know, I think you got scholarship money.
Yep.
Presumably helped you get through college, pay for college. But you know, we both know that very few kids get much money.
To cover.
And I think covering the costs of all the teams and the tournaments and all that stuff, if you added all that up, how does that compare to what, I mean, unless you got a full scholarship, how does that even compare? And you can't bank on that. That's the other thing as a parent, you can't bank on it.
The pressure associated with like, you have to get a scholarship is immense for a teenager.
Yes.
But yeah, I think you're right that if you did add up, you know, depending on where you play and everything, if you add up the expenses of your youth career, a lot of the time it may cancel out what you would receive in a scholarship.
Yes. I mean, because most college scholarship money goes to football and basketball.
Right. So yeah, most women's sports, it's, you don't get a full ride anyways.
Yes. Right.
So yeah. And what's the percentage? How many like 3% of,
I think it's 2% of 2%? High school athletes get any money at all.
Right.
So that's what I mean. You can't bank on it. Like when your kid's 8 years old, well, if we put all this money in, maybe in 10 years, he or she will get a scholarship. It's like, well, it's, who knows?
No, I mean, there's a better chance that they'll burn out than they'll, than than it will get a scholarship, honestly.
Yes. I mean, it might be a better investment to take that money and put it in an index fund, invest it and see where you end up in 10 years.
Exactly.
In most cases, I imagine parents would be better off. And again, that's why I think it's more, it's about more than, you know, your case is different because you were able to get to college and get some scholarship funding, which was huge. I think for many families, it's much less than they think. And that if you're really just doing it in terms of economics, they'd be better off just investing that money.
You're right.
Getting tutors for their kids, you know, like help them academically. That's, you know.
That's huge. Yeah. I think people might need to replay that section a couple times.
Yeah.
I love that. So let's say that, let's get into some of the solutions, right? So we know some of the big problems. But some of the big solutions, one of the, I think it was maybe the first one you said in your book was the one that I really highlighted. And it was, I believe, I have it right here. It's follow their lead.
Yes.
Right? So how can parents be a part of the solution? Follow their lead. So what do you mean by that? And how can parents do that?
Well, again, that's like a cousin to the Aspen Institute's ask your kids what they want. That they have to be the ones driving their sports participation. And what they want to play and how much they want to play. And that is so anathema to the way we do things in this country where, you know, we just sign our kids up and drop them off the field. And but it's so much better for them and for their long-term development if they are the ones choosing what they want to play. And even if it's not the sport you played and are desperate for them to play. You know, and I don't mean to say, I'm not so naive as to think that you can't just wait for them to say, oh, I'm dying to play baseball. You could certainly encourage and nudge and say, I think you'd really like this. And look, your friends are doing it, you know, the local stuff. And give them many options. That's the other related to, you know, look at them is give them a lot of options. If you're able to, if you can afford it, if you're in a community that has a lot of options, you know, cast a wide net because you never know what kids are going to like or what they're going to be good at. You know, I had a girl on one of my teams who, I wrote about her in the book, actually, who she went out for the tennis team as a high school freshman and decided to give it up after a couple of practices because she had like no eye-hand coordination. And she became an outstanding runner, and went to college, Division I college, and ran for her college. And she did, it was a talent she didn't know she had. So you just don't know. And kids have to kind of figure that out. So that's what look at your child means. And as we were discussing, just let them play. You know, if they don't want to join one of these teams, let them play. Get them outside if you can, you know, encourage, I'm not saying you have to just let them sit there with their phones all day. I mean, I know that's a
Right.
temptation. Get them outside, let them play with them. And as they get older, I think I do believe that many kids are indoctrinated with this idea that you can't quit. You
I
should
was going to
never
ask
quit.
you what your thoughts were about that.
And, I just feel that that's not the right way to think about things. That I'm not saying you quit mid-season, certainly by high school, you should play out the season. You should, follow through on your commitments. But, again, it goes back to this idea that we're crushing creativity and, trying new things when you're a kid. That's when you should be trying things. So suppose you end up hating cross country, which a couple of my girls did. I'm like, that's fine. Go do something else. Like, you don't have to do this. And it's not like you don't have to be miserable to prove you're like a valuable person. And there are other things you can do, and that's fine. So I don't think quitting is like absolutely the worst thing in the world for kids. I think sometimes it's appropriate. And it's all case by case, but I don't think it should just be viewed as like failure.
No,
Find another
absolutely
thing to
not.
do,
Yeah, I actually got a message from a girl that I have worked with for a while, and she sent me a message and said, "Shay, I just want to let you know that thank you for all your work because you gave such and such the confidence to quit soccer, and now she's trying another sport." And for me, I would much rather receive that message that a girl had a confidence to quit a sport than, "Oh, you
That's
gave my kid a
great.
confidence to, score 10 goals." Like, I don't care about that. I really don't.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
so it's like, yeah, that is, it is like, I think quitting takes a lot of courage
It
sometimes.
does take a lot. It's much harder to say this isn't for me and maybe I'm not that good at it than it is to just go along and okay, so now would be a good time for a digression for a minute if we could about girls and sports, because remember I wanted to,
Let's digress.
and about this girl having the courage to quit, which is wonderful. One thing I observed as a coach is that, and I'm sure it's not true everywhere, but the girls I worked with, they were all extremely compliant. They would do whatever I said. And I, for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part, they were like, did whatever I asked. And I ran into this male coach one day. He coached the girls' hockey team. And I asked him, if he coached boys and girls. And he said, I love coaching girls. I said, oh, why? He said, because they do anything you say. And that, like, a little, like, it kind of gave me the chills because while as a coach, you do want your kids to do what you say, you want them to comply and not give you a battle. I think it's so important for girls to be able to say, well, okay, no, that's not working for me. Or another example is, like in running, certainly there are particular races. Maybe a girl really doesn't want to do the 400. Maybe she wants to do the mile. And I saw this with girls who would like, well, the coach and the father are off there chatting on the sidelines and figuring out what the girl is going to be doing. And that really bothered me, that I think girls need to be encouraged to speak up, to say no, and to assert what they want to do. Like this one girl, it just killed me. She really wanted to run the mile. I was like, oh, nope, sorry, you're doing the 400. This is what you're good at. I don't care. Her interests were not taken into account. And I'm sure that happens with boys too. But my sense is that teenage girls really struggle with confidence. I mean, of course they do. And that they need to be encouraged to resist every now and then. And then
Oh,
this,
absolutely. And question.
question. Yes.
Because girls are people pleasers, naturally.
Yes.
It's funny, I did a presentation for some coaches at a high school in Oregon recently, and one of the coaches used the analogy of that girls are like dogs, where they want to please, they're obedient, they do what you say, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like it's kind of true. Like that's
Yes.
why sometimes a lot of coaches are like, I love coaching girls because they just do anything that you want them
Yes.
to do, which in a
Yes.
way is good, but like, yeah, they sometimes, man, girls need to stand up, speak up, because if they don't, then they're going to experience that in their careers. They're going to get stepped on. They're not going to let their voices be heard. So I think it's important for girls to kind of make a stand sometimes.
Well, and I think it's also how abuses happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because you're just going to, you know, the coach, well, if the coach says I ought to do this, I guess yep. I should, you know, even if it doesn't feel right, or if, is there a part of you that knows this is not healthy? You know, I think, it really is necessary. And I think parents should talk to their girls about this, that you need to look out for yourself also. And it's funny to say this as a coach, because, you know, of course I wanted the girls to do what I said,
yeah.
but I also want them to be able to speak for themselves and assert themselves and have opinions about the sport, you know, which is another topic we could go into about, like, inviting them in to participate in their own coaching. Like, that's healthy coaching is getting the whole team involved. It's not just, you know, issuing proclamations from on high.
Yeah. 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 I love that. And with the kind of abuse thing, I know you mentioned that with what can parents do. And I've heard this from a couple parents before where they're like, my daughter is getting, you know, verbally abused by their coach, but the team is just so good and we don't have any other options. I'm like, oh, like they're nothing is worth staying in an abusive situation. Like, I don't care where you're at. Like, you have to get out. So talk about, like, I know you say, like, know the coach and just say no. And those are some of the other things. So talk about that a little bit as far as the parent side.
Well, you know, that's something I've come to realize, that, you know, the many parents are afraid of being, they don't want to be the, they don't want to be the complaining, but that parent, they don't want to be the crazy one always calling. And which, look, we coaches appreciate that, because we don't, we don't want you to, like, question us about all our decisions, right? But what I have noticed is, and exactly what you're saying, that the parents who do object, it's about their kids' playing time, it's about whether they made JV or varsity, it's whether or not they got picked captain or if they got MVP. They do object, but it's about the wrong things. And when there are real issues that they should be objecting about, whether it's the kid is being berated or the practices, or, you know, they're like being punished in practice with, you know, harsh physical exercise, where there's like a culture of cruelty.
Yeah.
Those are when the parent should speak up, not when, you know, the kid gets, you know, doesn't start. It's just, there's this disconnect.
There's a time.
And I don't care, like you say, it doesn't matter how good the team is. And often with the better teams, it's harder to speak up because they think, oh, but they're doing so well. And, you know, I don't want to withhold the opportunity. It's like, no.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
Here's a thought that I had a couple weeks ago. I wrote it on a sticky note, and I don't know if there's any truth to this at all, but I'd love to get your take on it. That sports, a lot of people think sports, yes, can help a girl become more confident. Mm-hmm. But what I've seen a lot lately is, like, I wonder if sports actually is hurting a lot of girls' confidence because of maybe coaching or pressures of teammates and parents. Like, what are your thoughts on, do you think there's some validity to maybe sports is hurting?
I think it's really dependent on the context.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on the team and the coach.
Absolutely.
And the culture of the team. I think if it's a positive environment and the coach is, you know, welcoming and encouraging of everyone and allows for improvement, all the good stuff that you and I know coaches should do, that it's, chances are good the child will develop confidence. However, you know, as with your experience tearing your ACL, if you, when you're really into sports and there are your whole life and then you get hurt and you can't play, that's going to crush your confidence and your sense of self. And I think when you're not a good athlete, if you're on a team and, like, you can't ever quite make it, you're like, you're never able to make varsity, or you just can't, in running, you can't bring your times down.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not great for confidence.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So
it's not all good. It's not
not all good.
You know?
And I think that's what's been portrayed, is it's just all good, but there really are. I've seen a lot of girls just get totally beat down by, you know, whether it was, like you said, not making teams or coaches or just the pressures of it. And I'm like, is it worth it?
Yes.
So yeah, just a thought that I had. But
Well, I
one
think
of
that's
the
probably true for boys too.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah, so that's yeah, for sure both. One of the my two favorite things that you wrote in your book about how parents can, help solve this is number one, to get a life. I love that one. And miss some games. So talk about like
Yes.
I feel like those are kind of, tied
Yes,
together.
they're related,
Yeah,
yes.
talk about those two.
Well, miss some games, I think, and having been guilty of like almost never missing my son's games. And it felt like, oh, I gotta go see him. Yay, it's so exciting. Because again, it made me feel good to watch him play well. Again, it's a reminder that this is their activity. It's not your activity as a parent. Like, if you miss some games, it's a little reminder like, hey, this isn't for me. This is
For
for
you.
them. This is their sport, their activity. And also, like, to so the child doesn't feel like they can't perform when you're not there, or that
Oh,
they're
that
performing
happens a
for
lot.
you. You
Yeah.
know, like, miss some games. It is not the end of the world. And you're also signaling to your kid, and this is the get a life part, is it would be so much healthier for all concerned if adults kind of had their own interests and own pursuits that were separate from their kids' games. Because as much as it's exciting to see them play well, we need to remember that it isn't our thing, it's their thing. And it's better for the kids to realize that it's their thing, and that the parents there, whether the parent, how the parent feels about them is not dependent on how they play. To your example. And many kids feel that. I mean, of course, many kids feel that. When
Totally.
parents are like upset or jubilant, depending on how the kid plays, they pick up on that. And just if you can get your own life, it helps keep all of it in perspective too. Because it's so easy to feel like this is, to think this is so important. And it just isn't. It's just not that
It's really
important.
not.
Yeah.
That's I hope some parents maybe get a little triggered with that one, because if it does trigger them, it means like, oh, that's something I can look at, because it's so true. I look back and yeah, it was like that. I knew that was my dad's life. Like when we stopped playing, I was like, oh, kind of worried about my dad. Like, what's he gonna do now?
Yes.
What's, it was his life. And so it really is so important for your kids to have more fun and for you to show them that, hey, this is your thing. Like
Yeah.
go get your own thing.
Yes,
And
yes.
I'm sure you probably had the thing before you had kids.
Yes,
So yeah.
yes. Well, and I think about my own experience with sports, and running was the thing I've been best at.
Yep.
And my parents had absolutely zero involvement in that. They had no involvement. They were happy for me, and they were glad I did well, but they had no understanding of it, or no, they just know it was like, okay, well, Linda's going for a run. And I think that's so much better. It was my own initiative. It was entirely self-driven. And
Yeah.
another, I love this line, a friend said to me, she played college lacrosse, and she said, if my parents had thought that they were responsible for my play, I'd have said, you're just not that important to the situation. Like, I love that, because it's like you think, oh, it's all because of us, but it's not. It's because they want to do it. If they're going to do it well, it's because they want to do it, and they want to do it well, not because, you bought them the fancy stick.
Yeah. Or taught them everything you know.
Yes. Whether they liked it or not.
I had no choice. Dad, I had no choice. Yeah, I really like this has been such an amazing conversation. And I want to make sure, because there's so many things. Is there anything else that you want to share as far as what parents can do that we didn't already discuss?
I think one really important thing to do, and I've said this many times, is just you have to kind of work at keeping perspective, because forces in society are conspiring to help you lose it when it comes to kids' sports. The whole universe is telling you they got to do all this stuff, and it's very, very hard to keep perspective about what's important, what matters. And I offer some tips in the book about how to do that. I mean, it's not easy. It takes work. But one thing you can do is talk to older parents who've been through it, who will tell you that was crazy. It really didn't matter. It wasn't important. It just seemed important. There are steps you can take as a parent to try to like step back.
Yeah, and I can't remember if it was on an Instagram post on 1,000 hours outside or in the podcast that you guys did, but basically it's like one parent said, like, I'm not willing to give up my Saturdays to go, drive around kids all day and just give up my whole weekend just for this sport. And I think that's important, not just for you as a parent, but also for the whole
Yes.
family.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Linda, where can everyone pick up this book? I got it on Amazon,
Yep.
but I know they can grab it other places. So Take
Yep.
Back the Game. I haven't finished it. I kind of did a quick speed read and then, but I'm excited to finish it. So where can people find it? It's a must.
Well, as they say, anywhere books are sold, it's
Yeah.
available for purchase. And I want to keep the conversation going. And anyway, I can be reached on Twitter. I'm at Linda Flanagan 2, the number 2, and I'm always happy to engage with readers about their interests or questions.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. Like this, really, I could continue to go and go and go with you.
I
There's
know.
so many things to dive into. So I really do, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate you, number one, sitting down with me, but also just your work in general. I think it's so incredibly important
Thank you.
for the kids, the athletes, and just youth sports in our country.
Yeah.
So thank you, and everyone, please pick up Linda's book. Like, if you want to help your family and everything. I think it's a must. It's, I think, maybe the most important book that parents and families can read right now.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So thank you. And make sure you go follow Linda. And Linda, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Shay.